Hey, you're listening to the Bryant Park Project. I'm Allison Stewart.
And I'm Luke Burbank.
So, Luke, we've been doing these webcast podcasts. They've been short, kind of cool little interviews, but you know what? We have a two-hour show coming down the pike.
Yeah, I know. I tried to get it moved off to, like, 2009, but they're insisting on starting it this fall.
So we're going to amp it up a little bit, and we're going to start doing longer podcasts, 15, 20 minutes, getting some real live guests in here to talk about stuff.
But yeah, who really lively might not even show up. We have to talk to this guy later about the Chicago Mafia trial. We're going to maybe get him on the phone. I don't know.
He's actually in the courthouse where they're doing jury selection, so he's going to run out and talk to us.
But, you know, this is a news show, so, like, we should do some news, I guess.
All right, you want to try it?
Let's give it a shot.
We're going to rip and read out of the paper, just frankly, because we don't have a newscast. First one I thought was interesting. Checked out the Las Vegas Sun. Went to the website. Didn't get it out of Vegas. Interesting article about Harry Reid, obviously Democrat majority leader from Nevada, talking about the immigration bill and the position that he is in. And he's doing something that a lot of different politicians have been doing, wrapping themselves in the history of, I am the child of an immigrant, so I understand. He's talking about his wife's Russian immigrant father and how he came to this country, as if that sort of absolves the lawmaker of about what he's about to say.
Yeah,
which might sound anti-immigrant.
Yeah, this happened on our very podcast. We had a conservative blogger named Robert Bluey on who was talking about his feelings on immigration, and he said, as the grandson of Polish immigrants, and I guess the thing that stuck out to me about this, I've been hearing this everywhere, is, you know, this country isn't that old.
Yeah,
a couple hundred years plus. Basically, I think, you know, we're talking three or four great-grandparents back. Everyone, unless you're Native American.
Or my people.
Or, right, right. Everybody was, you know, someone's grandkid was from somebody's grandparent was from somewhere else. So I don't know. Maybe that's not quite as legitimate as people are making it out to be.
So go to LasVegasSun.com if you want to read the article. It talks about the position that Harry reads and whether or not he needs to support the unions or if he should continue to make concessions about this immigration bill, which is not dead yet.
All right, Allison, from the New York Times, the New York City Police Department is trying to require officers who have shot someone in the line of duty to take a breath test afterwards, a breathalyzer.
Yeah.
It seems kind of like something they'd already be doing.
Seems like a good idea, maybe.
Turns out they're not, and what happened was last November there was a shooting of an unarmed man, actually a few unarmed guys, in Queens outside of a strip club.
Yeah.
And the police officers that were there were undercover officers, but they sort of got into it with these guys and ended up killing one of them and injuring the rest of them. And the question is it okay for police officers who are undercover to really be drinking when they're on duty? They say they have to so they don't look suspicious.
And one of the things about that case is one of the men who was shot, his toxicology reports were released, and his family was really upset about that, saying, well, if you're going to talk about how my now dead relative was drunk, why don't I know about the cops?
Yeah. And the thing that I was surprised by is it turns out this is not something they're doing in tons of cities. I just can't believe that this is a kind of a controversial way to approach
it.
But anyway, we'll see what happens here in New York.
Seems like common sense, sort of. Okay, this one's kind of interesting, and this is what I'm just throwing out for debate for anybody listening. You know this whole sort of kerfuffle over some of Obama's campaign folks who are digging up some dirt on Hillary Clinton, talking about how her husband was paid like $300,000 in fees by a company that outsources jobs to India, and that she has very strong ties with the East Indian and Indian community. And then they put Hillary Clinton, Democrat, Punjab.
Right, like when you type a politician's name out and you see it in the paper, it'll usually say parenthetically, Democrat, New York. It'll say D, New York. That's where they're from.
Right. So this is suggesting she is beholden. And we were talking in the morning meeting. You know, you hear people do the Indian accent, the guy who works in the convenience store, and you hear it in cartoons. Somehow, it's okay to still bag on Indian people. And I don't know why that's okay, because if somebody did a Chinese accent or a really heavy Mexican accent, you know, people have been tossed off the radio for that.
Recently. It's interesting, too, to see kind of the Obama campaign, which has been pretty charmed so far, to kind of step in it with something like that. With how much speculating goes on and how much scrutiny happens with these releases and stuff,
yeah,
it blows me away that one got past the filters.
So if you have any – if you're thinking about it, can you think of a time when someone used an Indian accent or wrote or spoke disparagingly about an Indian or Indian American? Post it on our blog. We want to know.
All right, Allison, we're almost out of time.
Okay.
But last up here, you know – Wikipedia, very popular internet resource. But I don't know if you know this, but it turns out it's just an unbelievably liberal place. Well, at least according to a guy, named Andy Schlafly, and he's a homeschool kind of. He's a parent who kind of teaches a homeschool cooperative. His mom's also a kind of famous conservative.
I'd say he's also a kid of somebody famous.
Phyllis Schlafly, who's a big conservative social critic. But anyway, Andy Schlafly decided that he didn't like the reports that his kids were turning in that had cited these things in Wikipedia that he thought were just very liberal and showed this kind of bias. So he started like a conservative Wikipedia. Conservapedia. Which is, I guess, kind of interesting because the whole point with Wikipedia is that it's kind of neutral. And if you really, if he didn't like what was in there, you think he could just kind of go in and put in his two cents.
Yeah. Some of the entries are really interesting. The one about Hillary Clinton on Conservapedia, nothing about her family life. It starts right with her in the White House in trouble. Whereas if you go to Wikipedia, it talks about how she grew up and her religion and all that kind of stuff. So that shows you
the difference. It's like if Wikipedia is liberal and Conservapedia is conservative, then they're just... There just might as well be a conservative blog and a liberal blog, right? If they sort of go to their corners. The whole idea is you're supposed to hash it out in this arena of a wiki.
Well, they can all be wrong. I mean, Wikipedia is wrong about me right now. There's a mistake.
Really? What do they say?
They say I worked at Channel One, which I never did. I actually got something slanderous about me taking off Wikipedia. So just because it's on the internets doesn't make it true, everybody.
Although, speaking of the internets, it's one of the main things that we do here. By the way, that's it for the news. Kill the music. Thank you. All right, staying on all things internet-related, there was a great article in PC World recently which laid out the top 25 websites to watch. And, you know, I noticed that in my favorites I have a bunch of sites, but I go to them all the time. It's almost like CDs in your you know, stereo cabinet. Like, after a while, you're just like, huh, U2, War.
Again?
I've listened to that. You always want to, you know, add something new, some cool, shiny new thing. And looking at this article, there's a lot of really cool stuff that I had not seen one of these websites
I've
before.
Been very entertained all morning by this.
So Preston Gralla is the guy who wrote it. He's a regular contributor to PC World. He's also the author of 35 books, including Windows Vista in a nutshell. Preston, thanks for coming on the Bryant Park Project.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So this is just like a great list of websites, which, by the way, we're going to put up on our blog. So anyone out there listening, if you want to check these out, head over to the Bryant Park Project. Let's just jump right in, Preston, with one of the ones that I was really intrigued by, Spock, spock.com.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me a little bit about what Spock does for you.
If you spend too much time Googling friends, Googling other people, you really should go to this site because it's the one that specializes in finding people for you. So if you want to go there and you want to find out about a place or a thing, don't go here. But if you want to find out about people, go here, because what it'll do is it'll search through all the various social networking sites. It'll look through MySpace, Friendster, all that kind of stuff, look through more general websites as well, and then it'll show you links in all kinds of different categories. So it'll find a person, it'll find the most important information about them, and then it'll put links in each of those categories. For example, if you type in Barack Obama, you'll get groupings like Democrat, Senator, 2008 presidential candidate. And it's easy to get lost in this site because it's one of these sites that just keeps drilling down and drilling down and drilling down, and all of a sudden you don't know how you ended up where you did, but you sort of remember where you started off. But it's a great place if you want to find out about people.
See, and that's what intrigued me, because I'm the king of Googling people. Like, if people will send mean emails to me about radio stories I've done, and I will Google them.
Oh, yeah.
Actual NPR listeners. I found this one guy worked at the Sacramento County Water Department. I totally could figure out what building he worked in.
So tell me how you decided a website ends up being one to watch. What's the criteria? How do I make it onto this list?
That was tough, I have to admit, because there were so many out there. And what I try to do, first of all, is I try to have it in general categories. I wanted to make sure that I had something for everybody. So I had some techie kind of sites, like something called Yahoo Pipes and Popfly. That's sort of for quasi-programmers. And then I had more a lot of social networking kind of sites. I had organizing kind of sites. So first I thought of the general categories. And then, you know, from there on, I have to admit, a lot of it was just plain instinct. First of all, I wanted to make sure that each site was real. I mean, it's easy enough to put up a site with a little bit of content and a little bit of features, but I drilled pretty deep into each of them to make sure there was really something behind each of those sites. And then after that, it was really more than anything, just gut instinct.
All right. Another site that I kind of circled here is called Picnic. Well, the reason I thought of this is because today we're trying to put some photos up on the blog. And we don't even have the
right for it.
We don't have the right stuff to even edit these photos.
Well, that's the thing. You know, these days, for years people have been saying, well, you're not going to need software on your computer because you go into the Internet and the software will be on the Internet right for you. And it really hasn't happened until now, really, and it really is starting now. And Picnic is a really nice site that has all kinds of nice digital editing things for pictures and photos. So it's a photo organizer, but it's also a photo editor as well, and that's what's really nice about it. And as the site gets better, in other words, as they keep adding new kind of photo editing features, it's not as if you have to download the software again. It's just you go to the website, and there it is.
Okay. I tell people right now to allot at least an hour of their life for the next website, buzzdash.com. It's just a series of polls. Like one of them was, do you work with anyone whose job function is a mystery to you?
Do you
and apparently 73% people say, yeah, I do, actually.
Do you co-host a faux radio show with someone whose job is a total mystery to you?
So what did you like about BuzzDash?
I liked exactly what you just described. It is the greatest time waster in the world. I mean, I'm a real sucker for polls, and the more arcane and useless, the better. And stats and information and little-known information and things that I'll learn today and forget 2 hours from now. And it's a great site for that. I mean, you can just, as you said, any kind of poll you can imagine, quick opinion poll, they're on there. You could, of course, create your own as well, and that's what's really nice. It's not just that you can look at other people's polls, but you can create your own surveys as well. And it's, you know, the truth is, if you actually want it to be useful, you could do that. I mean, if forced into it, you could certainly make the site useful. But I don't, you know, the truth is most of the Internet sites, aside from Google, they're not useful. They're just fun and are entertaining. And for me, even though this site could be useful, it's really the entertainment value that's big for me.
It's entertaining. There's also some hard news on there. They actually had one poll up today talking about the U.S. lifting the embargo against Abbas's Palestinian government. So if you have an opinion about that, you can see what other people think as well.
Right. That's true. It is both.
All right. We're running out of time here, but I just wanted to jump to one last site, which is called Yodio, which is sort of a place where you can, you know, you could always put pictures up for people to see, but now you can even phone in audio content. I did this a few minutes ago. Let's hear if it worked out.
Hey, Allie and Preston, look at me. I'm Yodioing, although I highly doubt this is going to work.
So just in like 20 seconds, explain how this works.
Essentially, it's an audio postcard. So what you do is you have your cell phone, so you take some pictures, and then you can also you have your pictures taken, so then you call this phone number, and you create an audio postcard. So what, of course, the listeners didn't see is I assume you had some pictures there. So it's a really quick way to sort of share a little. You can make a little guided tour of a place if you want. It could be anything you want, but basically an audio postcard, easy to do with your cell phone. You don't have to do it with your cell phone. You can also create the audio with any kind of audio creating tools as well, and a regular digital camera instead of your cell phone. But I think it's mainly cell phones that's going to be using this one.
Well, Preston Gralla, contributor to PC World and also author of many books. Listen, thanks so much for coming on, telling us about these websites.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Thanks, Preston. Okay, Luke, I know you're still mourning The Sopranos just a little bit.
I have been very, very sad, and I've been looking for a surrogate, something to fill my Soprano hole.
Well, then I need you to bookmark the Chicago Sun-Times.
Already have it bookmarked.
Excellent, because they are chronicling a trial that's just starting today. Jury selection starting today. It's being called the Family Secrets Trial. We're going to get to why it's called Family Secrets in just a minute. The real-life defendants, they have names like Joey the Clown, Little Jimmy Marcello. These are men who have allegedly shot people to death, beaten people to death, buried people in cornfields somewhere. Allegedly. Just going to keep saying allegedly. Steve Warmbier is covering this trial for the Chicago Sun-Times. He stepped out of the courtroom just to call us, just to get us up to speed. Hey, Steve, are you there?
Sure am.
Why are they calling this the Family Secrets Trial? Let's start there.
Well, you know, two different reasons, really. You got, well, first it's, you know, the family, the outfit, the Chicago outfit. It's going to reveal the secrets of that family for the last 40 years or so. And then you've got the other family, the Calabrese family. Frank Calabrese Sr., he's a convicted loan shark and alleged, as you guys say, outfit hitman. He's charged in 13 murders. The whole case is 18. He's got 13 put on him as accusations. And you're going to see a lot of the Calabrese family secrets in this case, because he's not only got his brother testifying against him, who is a mob hitman, a convicted mob hitman now, but you've also got his son testifying against him, too. And his son doesn't have anything to do with this case. He was in prison with his father on another case back in about 7 years ago or so. But he was secretly recording his dad because he wanted to make sure that his dad stayed in prison for the rest of his life. So he was recording him for the FBI, and his dad was talking about everything from, you know, doing the mob ceremony that you see in the movies, and there's some similarities there to, you know, going out and allegedly whacking guys. So pretty much the whole nine yards. So you're going to see some family secrets to that family.
I know there were originally 14 defendants when the indictments were handed up back in April in 05, but now I think we're down to five guys?
That's right, we're down to five.
How did we get down to five?
Well, a couple different ways. Two guys died.
That would do it.
That'll do it, yeah. I mean, it's an older bunch that's being indicted. So two of the guys died, and you've got six have pleaded out. And then you've got one guy who is too sick to go to trial. He's another alleged mob hitman, a guy named Frank the German Schweiss, an allegedly prolific mob hitman, a guy even that other mob hitmen were scared of. But he's too sick. He's battling cancer, and he's not going to make it to trial. So then we've got five left.
Well, Steve, you're talking about these guys being older and they're sort of dropping like flies. Is this an indication? Like, it's hard to get a sense for how powerful organized crime still is. I mean, did these guys at one time allegedly run an entire neighborhood of Chicago, and now they just are holding on in little pockets? I mean, where are things at?
Well, I mean, these are guys who ran Chicago, period, for the mob. I mean, you've got Jimmy Marcello. He is the reputed Chicago mob boss for the last few years, allegedly, especially when he got out of prison. But, you know, the mob certainly is on the wane. I mean, if you look at these guys, you've got the range in age from roughly their early 60s to Joey the Clown is pushing 80, 78. And the Chicago mob is on their way out. I mean, there's always going to be some kind of Chicago mob around, but they're certainly not, you know, they don't have their strength at all like they used to be, even, say, in the 70s and the 80s. I mean, this trial is going to go back to 1970. With the first hit happening in 1970, and that's when the outfit was really incredibly strong here.
Plus, Joey the Clown's bedtime is like 7 now. I mean, it's hard to be a hitman when you go to bed right after Murder, She Wrote ends.
Exactly. Yeah, you get milk and cookie time.
Murder, He Did, apparently, right. As opposed to Murder, She
Allegedly,
Wrote. Allegedly.
Right.
One of the articles that you wrote, Steve, which really caught my attention, is you interviewed the children of one of the people who was killed by these people, allegedly. And you make the point, or one of the kids made the point, that while we've all been watching The Sopranos and we've seen Goodfellas, that this is not romantic, that these folks, these young men, watched their father die.
Right, exactly. One of the young, he's a middle-aged guy now. He watched his father get blown away by a three masked gunman. And his brother was 12 years old at the time. He wasn't there, but these two guys were grievously affected for the rest of their lives. It's something that's sort of been a shroud hanging over their entire lives since they were little boys. I mean, just think about it. Can you imagine not only knowing for the longest time who did this to your father, but also knowing that these guys are still out there?
So what's happening today is jury selection. You need 18 people to serve in this jury, 12 permanent, 6 alternates. But who's really going to want to serve on a jury full of a room full of mobsters?
Right. I mean, that's one of the reasons why they kept it an anonymous jury, probably, to make the jurors feel a little more secure and also to, stop any jury tampering.
Explain that to people. It's an anonymous jury?
Sure. Anonymous jury, they all go by number. So nobody knows their name. I mean, the court system knows their names, but defense attorneys in general don't know their names. Prosecutors don't know their names. They're just, they fill out a very extensive questionnaire. So, none of the lawyers are going to be, absent any information. They're going to have plenty of information on these people, but they're not going to have their names or any, closely identifying material where they could figure out exactly who these folks are.
Before we let you go, the person who handed up these indictments, U.S. Attorney Patrick Fitzgerald, NPR News listeners will recognize that name, has said at the time, this unprecedented indictment puts a hit on the mob. So is that just wordplay and hyperbole on his part, or is this really an extraordinary trial?
Well, yeah, you know, it really is. I mean, you do hear a lot of, you know, kind of, you know, hyperbole on these kind of cases. But first of all, this is the first time that the outfit has ever been charged as a criminal enterprise. Now, they charged crews before in Chicago, mob crews, but they never charged the outfit as an organization itself. And with the exception of one or two guys, I mean, these are pretty much the guys who have allegedly led the outfit for years, either, you know, day-to-day or, you know, in an advisory capacity. So, you know, you really got a bunch of guys who were, you know, really the top guys of the mob. And this Nick Calabrese, who's the brother of Frank Calabrese Sr., the guy on trial, Nick Calabrese is going to be able to talk about 16 murders that he was directly involved with, and he's going to be able to talk about 22 other mob murders that he has knowledge of. So at least for Chicago, and probably the nation, I don't think there's ever been a witness like this ever that, you know, is going to be able to give, you know, such insight into the, you know, the quote-unquote family secrets of the Chicago outfit.
Listen, Steve Warmber of the Chicago Sun-Times, thank you so much for filling us in on this trial. And, you know, just when you're writing about it, be careful. We don't want you writing with the fishes.
Thanks, guys. Thanks.
Steve Warmber, he, by the way, Allison, stepped out of the Dirksen building, literally stepped out of the courtroom to talk to us.
Pretty good guy. Hopefully we'll check in with him, I think, over the course of the trial. What do you think?
I think that's a good idea.
All right. I think we're done for the day, sir.
All right. Take the rest of the day off.
You too.
Not you, Dan. You have to cut this.
I'm Allison Stewart.
I'm Luke Burbank. This is the Bryant Park Project.
Baby went to Amsterdam. She put a little money to travel.